Shiraz, you've been working on a gene that has some role that eventually could help us in the early detection of cancer. What is this gene?
The gene is has a really interesting name. The abbreviation is RASSF1, and it stands for RAS Association Family Member. It was identified probably about a decade ago, and it was identified because genetically it was missing in breast and lung cancer patients. And the gene turns out to be quite an interesting gene. It's actually been classified as what's called a tumor suppressor gene, which is a gene that basically inhibits the formation of tumors. And it's now, a decade later, it's now known to be one of the most silenced genes in human cancers, meaning it's one of the most heavily targeted genes by cancer cells to shut down its function. And we now know why cancer cells shut down the function of this gene, because this gene is involved in preventing tumor formation. So cancer cells are smart in that way, in that it shut down the function of a gene that would inhibit their survival.
Do you have any indication of why that happens?
We're beginning to understand why that happens. And genetically, there's an area that basically cancer cells recognize, and they basically shut down its function. Why it's a target, we still don't know that. But this gene, now that we've investigated over the past several years, it turns out to be a gene that's involved in how the cells die. Without this gene, cells do not undergo a natural process to die under abnormal conditions. And a cancer cell is basically abnormal. So if the cancer cells exist and everything is normal in the cell will be induced to die. But cancer cells, because they've shut down the function of this gene, there's no death of the cancer cell, and therefore the cancer cells survive. So we're quite interested in reactivating this program. Can we selectively in cancer cells turn this program back on so we can induce cancer cells to basically kill themselves? So we're quite interested in doing that.
How could this be used to detect cancers?
What we know now about the gene is not only is it one of the most genetically silenced genes in human cancers, but we know it's one of the earliest changes that happens toward a cancer form, I guess. And there's many changes that need to occur for cancer to arise, and we know this is one of the earliest changes. So with that knowledge, we think we can detect hard-to-detect cancers at an earlier stage. And we're working on lung cancer, and we're also quite interested in pancreatic cancer as two adult cancers that are quite hard to detect. And once they appear, they're really hard to treat. And so we're hoping that because we know this gene is one of the earliest changes toward a cancer form, that we can use it as an early detection marker. And it actually has been marketed in the United States as a diagnostic test for ovarian cancer, which is also a very hard to detect cancer. So we're hoping to implement that in Canada also and use it as a marker for early detection for basically hard to detect cancers.
So what sort of a test might you do? Would it be just the blood test?
Basically, that's what it is. It's basically a blood test, and we use a technology called PCR, which is used to amplify the DNA that we get from the blood. And using very selective tools, we can selectively determine whether or not the gene is silenced or not. And that will tell us, you know, if this gene is silenced, that we know that it's one of the steps towards getting cancer. And so we're hoping that we can catch patients at an earlier stage before their cancer takes over their organ or their body. And we're hoping by using these very simple tools that we can definitely analyze the blood from the patients to detect whether or not they have some genetic changes that may predispose them to getting cancer.
What role have you played in these discoveries?
I've been heavily involved in understanding what the gene does and what the protein really does in the cell. And I was basically the first to determine that it's involved in the death mechanisms, the death stimuli that cancer cells avoid. And currently we are collaborating with the person who's marketing this as a diagnostic tool for ovarian cancer in the States. We have a collaboration with him to try to bring that technology here in Canada and use it and apply it to other hard-to-detect cancers. So I think I'm pretty much at the forefront of trying to utilize this test as an early detection test for a lot of hard-to-detect cancers. And we've been collaborating with several labs in the United States, primarily one lab in the United States, and also with a lab in Europe to try to get this test up and running.
Now, I understand there's also a connection in this research to inflammation and cancer. Can you explain that to me, please?
That's a very interesting link, and it's been known for a long time that an excessive inflammation can predispose individuals to getting cancers, but no one really understood why that is or what are the what they call them, the molecular players, the elements in your cell that causes this link between cancer and inflammation. And for our gene, it's quite interesting because we know it's involved in cancer, because if you don't have it, it's no longer functioning as a cancer or as a tumor inhibitor. But we now know that it's also involved in inflammation. And we know if the gene isn't there, there's a state of what's called chronic inflammation that occurs. And if that happens, we know that can definitely predispose individuals to getting cancer. And our model is actually inflammatory bowel disease. We know inflammatory bowel disease has two forms, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, which are two very prominent diseases in Alberta. And we now know in these patients, if they have chronic inflammation, which is persistent inflammation, they can get predisposed to getting colon cancer, colorectal cancer later in life. And for kids, there's definitely predisposition to getting what's called B-cell lymphomas or cancers of the blood. And so we're quite interested in understanding the inflammation, because our idea is that if we can understand and control the inflammation at an earlier step, then we can certainly prevent these patients from getting another disease, cancer, later in life. So we're very interested in that, and we now have a gene that's involved in cancer and inflammation, and that we can now understand the link between cancer and inflammation.
So if you're going to be working on, if this gene gets turned off, you want to be able to turn it back on again. Does that mean that if you detect sort of the early signs of the disease starting, that if you could turn it back on, you could actually prevent the disease?
We know that's possible. In using isolated cells in the lab, we can actually turn this gene back on, and we know that slows down the growth of cancer cells, and at some point we can actually eliminate the multiplication of cancer cells. And that's why I'm really so excited about what we do, because this gene is not actually deleted or mutated majority of the time. About 95% of the time, it's actually turned off. And so if you can understand the mechanisms of turning it back on, you are correct that we can slow down the growth of cancer cells and actually turn back on this cell death mechanisms, so cancer cells can induce themselves to die. At the same time, we know this gene is involved in inflammation, and we suspect it's most likely involved in shutting down the inflammatory response. And a lot of times what happens in chronic inflammation patients, such as inflammatory bowel disease patients, that mechanism doesn't happen. They still have a high degree of inflammation days after they had the primary infection. Again, if we can turn it back on, then we can turn on that natural program to shut down the inflammatory system. And we know we've collected about 300 patient samples from pediatric patients with Crohn's and colitis, and also adult patients with Crohn's and colitis, and we're starting to look at the expression, what's called the detection levels of this gene, and we know, and in about 40% of these patients, we see the loss of this gene also in inflammatory bowel disease patients. We haven't published on it yet, but we have a lot of data to show that this gene might also be silenced in Crohn's and colitis patients, which is telling us that this gene is also shut off, but it gives us hope because we can actually turn it back on and basically shut down the inflammation that these patients have. So that's our hope in the next couple of years, to finalize our patient analysis data and then start using some fancy mechanisms to turn the gene back on so we can regain that control that these patients lack.
How do you turn it back on?
There's a couple ways we can do it. What happens when these gene becomes inactivated or shut down or turned off, the DNA actually becomes what's called methylated. There's a special chemical that gets added to the DNA that normally shouldn't be added. And the body has a way to do that. And there's many reasons why the body does that. But in this case, it's abnormal. It shouldn't happen. But the body does do it. And we know that that does happen. And so what we're using is selective inhibitors for that process to inhibit the addition of what's called a chemical group to the DNA. So if we can prevent that, and we can reverse the process, then we can prevent this gene from becoming what's called methylated or changed, and then we can reverse the process, and then we can regain the control mechanisms that should be in place in a normal individual. So we have a couple of ways where we're testing it, and we're testing it in the lab right now. And hopefully within the next half a year, we would like to test it in a mouse model, an animal model, to see if we can regain the control mechanisms that should be in place.
So how long do you think it might be before something like this is actually available?
That probably could be take a while. Right now, we're submitting our initial findings to a journal called Nature Immunology, which is a very good journal to broadcast our publications. So I think based on what they tell us and what they think, like if our findings are interesting, that we could definitely pursue to the next step. And right now we have a lot of really interesting animal models to model the human disease, and we're currently testing a few different therapies and methodologies to try to reverse this phenotype. So what I described earlier was just one way of inhibiting the inflammation that these patients may have. Another interesting angle we're pursuing is the use of a chemical called resveratrol. And resveratrol is actually an ingredient that's very commonly found in red wine. It has an amazing therapeutic effects on multiple different aspects of physiology, like cardiac function and immune system function. And what we're finding is that if we feed our animals resveratrol for a certain number of weeks, and then we try to induce the inflammation, we don't see it. And we know resveratrol is somehow inhibiting this process. And so we're actively pursuing how does this happen. If it's true, then there's definitely an active ingredient in red wine that should help you, you know, to reverse the phenotype and or reverse the condition that you may have. And we're hoping that's another angle we can pursue to turn this gene back on and to basically regain the control mechanisms that are missing.
So we should all go into the wine business then.
It's definitely encouraging. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't harm. But the compound needs to be in a more concentrated form in order to work effectively. In red wine, it is there, but it's not in the concentrations. I think you have to drink a lot of wine per day in order for that to happen. But we're hoping to, you know, extract out a workable amount of the chemical in order to use that. And certainly the results are very encouraging in mice that we can actually reverse the symptoms that these mice have in terms of their inflammation and inflammatory conditions that mimic inflammatory bowel disease. So definitely inflammatory bowel disease is our model for the link between inflammation and cancer. And because we know these patients, if they have persistent inflammation, we know they will definitely get colon or colorectal cancer later in life, and we really want to prevent that from happening.
Who's supporting your research?
We get support from a number of organizations. The former Alberta Heritage Foundation is a big supporter of us. We've also had help from the Canadian Institutes of Health Research, the CIHR, and locally the Alberta Cancer Foundation, and also those are several of the organizations. And one very local organization called the Hair Massacre Fund, which is run by Tammy McDonald and her family, they've been a huge supporter of our research, and every year we love being involved with them because they really do support pediatric oncology research here at the university.
One of the things I find interesting is this research that you're doing has actually been traveling research. Tell me about the history of that.
It has an interesting history. Myself, I trained here at the University of Alberta in the Department of Pediatrics, and when I left here, I went to Harvard Medical School to train as an immunologist to learn about immunology and how the immune system works. And that eventually led me to England in 2001, and that's where this project was just newly developed, and the gene was actually just cloned, I think, about 6 months prior to my getting there. And the research lab that I went to was quite interested in understanding what does this gene do, because it was missing in lung and breast cancer patients. And so I was involved in the project, and I developed it over the next year being in London, England. And then I decided to come back to Harvard Medical School on faculty, and I developed the project a little bit more, and then eventually I was recruited here at the University of Alberta with this project as my primary project, and to really understand what does this gene do and how does it affect biology, and can we utilize its importance to understand human diseases. And based on the initial observations in cancer, I've taken that to inflammation now, and certainly our lab is very heavily involved in understanding the link between cancer and inflammation. And again, we're really interested in early diagnostics and how to prevent patients from developing other diseases later in life, and that mainly being cancer.
Thank you very much, Shiraz.
Thank you again.